Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, March 8th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave. I think we got Dave
Melody.
There.
Melody!
Yes.
I'm here.
Unmute.
No,
can you hear me?
I'm off mute. Happy International Women's Day.
Oh, no.
Yep, it's good true. Grief. We celebrate you today, your achievements.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
There you go. So I'm giving you a virtual hug.
Aw.
Yes.
Same to you.
Thank you.
Oh, let's see. Well, let's get started right away. We had a pretty interesting day in the markets, all over the place, so to speak. And I turned on the markets this morning, and gold was as high as 2,071. Backed off all the way to 2,008. And here we are at 2,053 for the day, up $53, almost 2.75%. So nice day in gold. It's always interesting. You know, people want to know if there's any good times to buy. Lots of times you can see the markets change. We come into the market from Europe, and gold, it's a lot stronger. And so we see those big numbers. And once their market closes, then you get into the plunge protection team here in the United States where they make their adjustments and so forth. And that's when you'll see some pressure. Not always, but lots of times that's the way the markets go. Even the paper markets, you know, especially if they're down, you'll start seeing a reversal after, I think it's 12:30. 11:30 or 12:30, because that's when their markets, you know, begin to close. So, so not a bad day for gold. Silver was up also almost 3%, up 74 cents at $26.50. Platinum was up $31 at $1,162, and palladium was up another whopping $198, up almost 7% on the day at $3,251. Now, we did see a little bit of pressure on the dollar. It came back somewhat. Now it's just down 0.17 at 99.08. The paper markets, it was all over the place. I think we had a high of 500 or close to it. Then it went to zero. Then it started to come back again. And now we're down 184 points. 32,632. And it cracks me up. The headline says, oh, the Dow drops 180 points after volatile session as traders try to assess impact of Russia-Ukraine war. Well, you know what?
I think they're assessing.
If they were truly assessing, the market should have been down 3,000 points today, because that's where it's going. There isn't anything good that's going to come out globally on this due to people just getting insane. The S&P was down 30 at 4,170. The NASDAQ was down 35 at 12,795. So from the high, I think the NASDAQ is down over 20%. The Dow and the S&P, I don't know, 10 and 12%. Somewhere in that range, and that's not including today's. But Asia markets, of course, were all negative. Europe, it's amazing. The FTSE was positive by a whole 4 points. But even Germany's and France, their markets were just down a tiny bit. So I'm not quite sure. I guess, I mean, people were, maybe they were buying on those big dips that they've had. Maybe people were talked into doing that. Don't know. But the 10-year yield today, 1.85%. That's moving up quite fast. And I guess all the problems are fixed. Oil. We had the oil. WTI was up over 4%. We are now at 124. Brent, pretty much the same. Was up 5, and that's at 128. Natural gas was down just a little bit. Well, actually, it was down 5% at 4.558. So that was negative. And so I think most everyone is probably aware that you now can go out and buy an electric vehicle because Biden has now announced the ban of Russian oil imports. And, of course, this is to sever Moscow from the global economy. And we do have to punish Putin for his unprovoked aggression. Biden said today, I'm announcing the United States is targeting the main artery of Russia's economy. We're banning all imports of Russian oil and gas and energy. That means Russia oil will no longer be acceptable at U.S. ports, and the American people will deal another powerful blow to Putin's war machine. Well, what about another powerful deal to our gasoline prices? Because I don't think, and we'll have to, I don't know at this point in time, but I don't think he's reversed anything for greater production here in the United States. And that's the whole point. We had to go to Saudi Arabia. I'm sure they had that conversation yesterday. He was supposed to go, Dave. I don't think he went, but I'm sure they had a conversation. And, of course, there was chatter about Venezuela. Iran, I believe, walked away from the table yesterday. But, hey, go buy your electric vehicles because we need clean energy here in the United States. It doesn't matter what you pay for your gasoline until that happens. But anyway, that's just my little commentary, my little rift for the day. The European Union earlier today also announced that it would also wean itself off of Russia oil and gas. Well, you know what? What happens when Putin, if he does, would stop the flow? Cold turkey. What would happen then? I mean, it heads us into a bigger war. And it's like decisions are made without thinking anything through to what's going to be the end game. And the U.S. imported about 672,000 barrels a day from Russia. That amount compromises roughly 8% of the total U.S. imports. Most of our crude oil and petroleum, of course, comes from Canada and Mexico and Saudi Arabia. So there you have it, Dave. Are you there, Dave? Do you have your mute button on again?
Well, right after Biden's announcement, the price on domestic oil futures for April deliveries hit almost $130 a barrel, just below the recent high hit yesterday, which is the highest on oil futures since 2008. We're going to be talking a lot more about oil in the third segment. Russia's fiat ruble has plummeted in value since the sanctions. Its stock market remains closed. And a growing list of companies have announced or have already pulled out their businesses from Russia. Includes Shell Oil Company, which vowed to immediately stop buying Russian crude and shutter all its service stations there. McDonald's announced closure of over 800 stores there. Sort of a game of chicken here in America about whether Biden was going to stop the flow of Russian oil before Congress mandated it by legislation.
Well, that wouldn't have been good for his ratings.
U.S. gas prices touching all-time highs, now at $4.17. a gallon. Of course, that was this morning. It likely is higher now as we speak. Oh, it's not a pretty time anywhere in the world right now. Things are getting wacky.
Wackier. They were wackier, but it's wackier. But it's also frightening and scary because a lot of these, it just doesn't seem like there's any thought through it. And
clearly a lot of discussion. I mean, we've been warned about this for days that they've been talking about it, and the acknowledgement that it's going to hurt, Americans at the pump, that it's going to add to inflation. I don't think it's happening in a vacuum. I think we can always disagree with the decision. I don't think we should have been buying oil from Russia
to begin with. We have enough here at home to do it, and that's the whole question. That's the whole problem.
That we do.
So we shut it off. So we have to pump more from Saudi and wherever we can get it instead of increasing it here at home.
The U.S. oil companies should be upping production.
You know, well, there's a lot of restrictions and regulation and stuff that's prevented it by executive order.
Nah, that's not true.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, you'll have to prove it. But
I will. So, okay.
Yeah. I mean, shutting down pipelines and, not doing it, and even press secretary comes out and they think this is a good idea to push for clean energy at a time when American people can't afford $4 and $5 gasoline. And so thank God it's not winter anymore. There's some areas that are still getting snow and need it. But most of those people are usually prepared well into winter to have their, to have these months covered. So they probably have already purchased their heating oil that they need for these last months of winter and the colder springs. But I saw an article. And I wanted to bring it up. Nickel. They actually stopped trading nickel. I'll see if I can't find that article, how important nickel is. And so, I don't know where this is all heading, but I just can't imagine that it's good. And, all we had to do to stop the war is to tell Putin in the very beginning that Ukraine couldn't be admitted to NATO. He was willing to talk, but that's his number one request, is to keep NATO out of Ukraine. So, I don't know. If he stops the energy to Europe, I would think we're in a full-fledged war. It will be World War III. So, I don't know. And, he has threatened to shut the natural gas off to Germany. It's absolutely clear that a rejection of Russian oil would lead to catastrophic consequences for the global market. The surge in prices would be unpredictable. We talked about this yesterday, $300 per barrel, if not more. I mean, those are incredible numbers that we talk about. So, should we really be cheering on that we stop the oil from Russia at this point in time? I don't know. Germany, the Netherlands, and the UK have appeared to back away from a coordinated Western embargo on Russian energy exports. Energy analysts have warned that a ban on Russian oil and gas would have seismic repercussions for energy markets and the world economy.
Well, what I'd say is that Europe is not going to stop buying Russian oil per se. Now, the EC has announced, I think we talk a little bit about this in the second segment, that it is going to do whatever it can to reduce its reliance on foreign oil. That's mainly Russian foreign oil. by the end of the year and, again, eliminate its reliance on Russian oil, I think, by the end of the decade. So it's going to be, it is good that we're approaching the end of winter, although in some sections of Europe, northern Europe, it's still pretty gosh darn cold.
Yeah.
Home heating oil and gas are not going to get any cheaper, and certainly would be catastrophic if Putin decides to shut it off. Some would argue that, you know, that would be highly immoral. We see how morality has affected that man most of his public life, which is to say most of his adult life. But you know, Russia is the third largest oil producer behind the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. Their annual budget depends upon those oil revenues. On the one hand, you can say cutting off that supply could be devastating to Russia. Putin's not the kind of guy who I think will take that lightly, and certainly not the kind of guy to turn the other cheek. But you do have Germany's Olaf Scholz still resisting that move. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson this afternoon appeared to side with Scholz. So I think there's, Germany, I believe, is the largest importer of Russian oil in Europe. I believe it accounts for about a little over 40% of their energy. You're playing with fire. I don't think it's such a big deal for the U.S. necessarily, but certainly when it comes to Europe, it's a game changer.
It's not a big deal, but ask those people who can't afford $4 of gasoline and $5. It's a big deal to them.
Let's have a letter writing campaign to Boris. Vladimir.
They can all buy electric vehicles out there. So, but you know, another thing that's happening, we were seeing all these corporations across all sectors exit Russia. And we'll talk about that when we get back from the break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And we're heading into the break, and we were going to talk, and does corporate exit from Russia signify deglobalization? I certainly don't think so. But anyway, there's comments that that this is happening, and we're going to talk about it. As I mentioned, we've seen all types of corporations from all sectors of the economy exit Russia. One of the questions being weighed is where this response to an act of unprovoked war fits on the spectrum of corporate decision-making. And it's true. Is this a short-term pause, a simple demonstration of the lasting influence of environmental, social, and corporate governance? Or is it a significant reshaping of corporate strategy and the economy around deglobalization? I think it's the first one. For experts in the international business and management, the current events appear as if they may go well beyond reputation management to a fundamental shift. From the post-World War II period of increasingly global markets and effects to achieve global scale, which were still firmly in place only about 2 weeks ago. A professor of management at the Wharton School observed the world has changed. This is a fundamental break. It isn't a proxy war or a limited incursion. This is not something that has happened since 1940. One thing is clear, the old school political risk of conventional international warfare is back. So I got a question, though. If this has not happened since 1940, there have been other wars since 1940.
Well, it's interesting. This particular article points out that, you know, most of the large-scale violence has been geographically restricted. For example, pockets of terrorist activity, civil wars in various nations, drug cartels, and then in failed states like Afghanistan. Gary Huffbauer at the Peterson Institute believes it's too soon to conclude that a broader deglobalization trend is happening, but he thinks the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and I guess by implicitly, saying that it's potentially significant. He pointed out that from 2010 to 15, globalization increased. In fact, it increased rapidly, particularly, you know, in the emerging markets. But the rate slowed between 2015 and 2019. And, of course, COVID caused it to actually go backwards in 2020. The question he believes is, by 2025, what will happen? Will that abrupt reversal continue? Is this just a blip that will either go on despite, you know, the impact of these sanctions and whatever else may happen? But one academic said, obviously, Russia itself will become substantially cut off. But remember that Russia is just a very small share of the global economy.
Well,
an interesting point. I think I think it's going to take more for globalization.
It's not going to stop. That's what they want. There's too much money and power in this, in globalization. So, and it's not going to change. It's not going to go back. That means we'd have to cut off the head of China to deglobalize anything. And that's not going to happen. So the talk of deglobalization, to me, my question is, you have these multinational corporations destroying an economy. You know, we also have to think about the people of Russia, not Putin himself, but the people of Russia. We just write them off too?
No, you can. Know, I mean, I think that thinking is that, and I'm not defending it necessarily, I'm just I'm pointing out that they think that, especially in a closed or totalitarian style of society like Russia, is that if you squeeze the people, that in turn will cause disruption and squeeze Putin, perhaps to the extent of, you know, his removal by whatever means. I think it's
Well, then if that was the case, then the multinational corporations would just go back in there and all is happy again. So the talk of deglobalization is... as attractive that might seem to some, it's not going to happen. It's just, I don't even know where they... But anyway...
It's something to sell. To sell a newsletter, a report, a blog, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we already talked about the EU planning to reduce Russian energy dependency a little bit ago. I don't know if there's anything else in here that seems to that we haven't mentioned, Dave.
No, I'd go back a second to the other topic. I mean, you alluded to China, and China would be the key there. But I wonder what would happen if China, whenever it would happen. How the world would the world react in a similar way? Could the world react in a similar way?
No,
because of China's standing in the world, say compared to Russia. Russia, I think, is the 11th largest economy. China is number two, and is I think is larger than the third through fifth or sixth combined. So there's a lot more. Standing power on the global stage for Xi Jinping.
Well, I don't think you're going to break the relationship between Russia and China, but you know, China does certainly have. Maybe China is the key. Maybe they could help de-escalate, but I think it's too far gone. And trust me, Putin and Xi already had their conversation when he was over there. So they know exactly, China knows exactly what's going on. And we could never do to China what we're doing to Russia. Because I mean, when you look at the amount of debt that they own, what they owe us, what they produce for us, I'm sorry. China controls the U.S. And probably most of the world. And we might have a little bit larger economy than China, but that's probably all we have. There's no way we could beat them militarily, I don't think. I wouldn't want to see it. They produce too many of our our pharmaceuticals. I mean... can we bring them back to the States? What's going to come back to them? The amount of money these corporations make? They're not going to give up their money. They're not going to give up their billions of dollars that they make. It's just not going to happen. So I guess we can talk about it, maybe hope that we can. But I can't see it happening, Dave.
Well, I guess we can always our consolation, perhaps, is, well, at least we can talk about it here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you can talk about these kinds of things in those two other countries. China already rewriting the script on Ukraine, it sounds like.
Oh, there's so much propaganda floating around in all parts, I believe. I don't know what to believe. It's very difficult to watch mainstream media because I don't know what's true and what's not true anymore. And what they promote, I don't know where to go for news anymore. It's tough. It's tough. And, hey, I kind of like Putin's idea. I don't think going to jail is worth it. If you write fake news, you go to jail. But you know what? Hey, if you get caught writing fake news, you should be fined pretty heavily until you stop it. People need to be put on the carpet for telling lies. And everybody just shakes their head and accepts the lies, and people get punished a little bit. You know, they're off the air for, you know, maybe a year, like Lion Brian. He's off for a year and so forth, and then they bring him back, and the next he's the new little newsboy that, you know, can do no wrong. And, hey, on both sides, you can find news reporters and journalists and mainstream people that change the directive or the conversation to the point where it's so distorted. Yeah, they should be held accountable when they lie. And I get it's easy. It's easy to pick up a news article and maybe not do enough research on it to where you can get caught up in saying something that really isn't true. I get that part, but the person who's originally wrote it that is lying and so forth should be held accountable. But hey, in the new world we live in, no one is held accountable. It just doesn't matter anymore. And it's sad. And it's sad. But in fact, you get released from jail and you have no bail. That's, I don't know. It's just a crazy world. Just a crazy world, Dave. But anyway, you did mention China rewriting script. That's what got me off on everybody's propaganda. So I don't know if you want to add anything else to that.
Well, no, what I would say, though, there's a fundamental difference between what you're saying about holding someone accountable for incorrect or untruthful reporting. It's another thing when you hide it, when you hide the truth, when you hide the reality from your own people. To protect your own skin, like Putin apparently is doing in Russia, and what China reportedly has been doing and is doing now regarding the Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So I think that's all looking at...
Comes from our government, though, too. I mean, there's just as much propaganda being pushed on this war than, you know, I don't think we can point fingers. Yeah, you know, they're all doing
fingers.
It.
I think we can and should continue pointing fingers. This was such an unnecessary war, and Putin's incursion into Ukraine is something I think he'll come to regret. I hope he does in any event.
But it all comes back to that NATO thing.
Answer me this. When exactly was Ukraine admitted to NATO?
They weren't.
Right.
But they signed an agreement with Biden back in November that opened the door for NATO to accept Ukraine, or the agreement to where it would help Ukraine be admitted into NATO. I mean, that was and I don't know if that was that's just being held up as the main reason and so forth. But supposedly, if we believe anything, that every time they've sat down for peace talks, that's the number one on his list.
Yeah, it sounds like a Tucker Carlson piece of BS.
No, I heard it everywhere. I don't listen to Tucker Carlson.
The only thing that Biden did that I'm aware of is that he authorized the authorized, I guess it was the State Department, perhaps, and his ambassador to the UN to help Zelensky in the process of writing an application for admission to NATO. That didn't necessarily, I mean, the door's always been open, but I mean, the NATO is set a long time ago, after Ukraine got its independence, that it was going to take a very long time, that they were certainly not going to put it on the fast track. Now, that, of course, may change now.
But there was efforts to fast track it. Backed by the U.S.
No, I'm not sure I agree with that.
Well,
that characterization.
But even so, they only had to make it a point that it wasn't on a fast track. All they had to do is make it a point not a fast track. And they didn't do it.
NATO made that clear through diplomatic channels. It's just that now, I mean, when it became an issue.
But the U.S. was getting involved. So, I mean, the U.S. comes out and, you know, the U.S. is, at this point, sounds like they are NATO.
No.
So, are they?
We're a member of NATO.
Right. We pay most of the money, so we get the most say, I guess. But anyway, there's a lot of misinformation floating around out there on both sides, and that's the sad thing about it. But anyway, there was a bill to introduce to prevent Russia from liquidating its gold. These are bipartisan group of senators from liquidating gold to withstand the sanctions. I would think all they'd have to do was sell it to China. Here comes China again. This measure to close a loophole is yet another indication Congress is looking to implement its own punitive measures against Russia. The bill was introduced by Angus King of Maine and John Cornyn of Texas, Bill Hagerty of Tennessee, and Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire. They would target Russia's ability to sell its gold reserves. I don't think they would, but anyway, we're heading into a break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of other client business. This final segment, you can reach her at 1-800-375-4188. Found it interesting report here that neighbors of one of Trump's national security advisors, John Bolton, have been talking for months about the growing Secret Service presence outside his suburban Maryland home. Apparently, now we know why. The Washington Examiner reports that at least two Iranians belonging to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard's covert action Quds Force has been plotting to assassinate Bolton. A Justice Department official apparently confirmed the plot, unnamed, of course, but Iran apparently blames Bolton, Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State, and others for the so-called maximum pressure campaign on Iran under Trump, who withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal. The assassination plot has been supported by significant Revolutionary Guard reconnaissance activity and involved in an effort to recruit an assassin on U.S. soil, according to the Examiner, which adds that the intelligence community became aware of the plot at an early stage. Significant FBI assets were deployed to disrupt it. Now, this supposed Justice Department source told the Examiner that the department possesses indictable evidence against the Iranians, but Biden administration officials are resisting publicly indicting the men out of concern it could derail their goal of re-entering that nuclear deal with Iran, currently supposedly nearing completion of negotiations. Now, it is possible, although unlikely, that there are sealed indictments against the men, but the DOJ source said the seriousness of the conspiracy and the evidence warranted public indictment without delay. Now, sealed indictments would be unusual and probably unnecessary in this case, as they're usually used to prevent a target evading justice. Now, the Quds Force is fully aware of U.S. law enforcement and intelligence attention toward it, reportedly, so its members are unlikely to put themselves in a position to be arrested or with or without a sealed indictment. In any event, the high-level concern prompted this full-time Secret Service protective detail being assigned to Bolton a couple of months ago. Similar threats have been made and continue to be made against Mike Pompeo and other senior Trump administration officials who worked on Iran issues. In addition to the nuclear deal, some think the primary motive for the plots against the Americans is rooted in Iran's desire to avenge the January 2020 U.S. drone assassination of Quds Force commander Qassem Soleimani. That certainly has a lot of credibility. Well, as we discussed last week, Russia's invasion means bread prices are soaring. And soaring in many of the world's poorest, most fragile countries. And that's going to ignite a cycle, a new cycle of instability there. wheat prices have shot up to a record $12.94 per bushel and are up a whopping 70% over the last month alone. That's it's measured anyway by a futures contract on the Chicago Board of Trade. Throughout history, surging bread costs as far back as the French and Russian revolutions have been a major source of instability and violence. More recently, soaring food costs, including wheat, have been cited as an important contributor to the wave of instability known as the Arab Spring that swept through the Middle East starting in 2011. Both Russia and Ukraine are superpowers of the wheat world. Russia alone produces 11% of the world's wheat and is its largest exporter. Now, both those countries together export more than a quarter of the world's supply. I think Ukraine, I read, was the fourth or fifth largest exporter. That wheat is usually cheap. They sell it to some of the world's poorest countries in the Middle East and North Africa. Egypt, which is the world's largest wheat importer, gets roughly 60% of its wheat from Russia and another 25% from Ukraine. Ethiopia has become a major importer in recent years as well. The government bought wheat in bulk to provide subsidized food to the population. But now the government can't afford to purchase enough wheat to satisfy domestic demand. That's according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The surge in food prices forced Lebanon to cut supplies to prevent burning through national currency reserves. That could exacerbate Lebanon's social challenges, according to Fitch Ratings, as the country only holds one month's worth of wheat in reserve. Bottom line here, besides inflicting suffering on the people of Ukraine, Russia's invasion is also spreading misery worldwide. Now, any Russian who wanted to come here isn't going to come. So says Liz Elliott. She's a real estate agent with Ecofine Properties in Martin County, Florida. Already, she said, a Russian client backed out of a deal she'd been working on. Observers of the U.S. real estate market are watching to see how all the new economic sanctions on oligarchs, but also on financial transactions involving money from Russian banks, will impact real estate sales. More broadly, the early signs of skittishness show how the impact of sanctions could spread to parts of the global markets that are typically supported by Russians living or visiting there. South Florida and Manhattan here in the U.S. have long been popular destinations for Russian cash, both of the legit and not so legit sort. Manhattan real estate expert Dolly Len says the heat is up. They're scared they're going to have their real estate seized or potentially seized. Ultra-wealthy Russians are calling her now, looking to sell or cancel upcoming deals. On the other hand, Elliott's clients are wealthy, not ultra-wealthy. She said, anyway, they're Russian citizens looking at homes priced between $250,000 and $1 million. Worth noting, oligarch real estate gets a lot of attention, but it's a very small part of the Manhattan market. According to Jonathan Miller, who's a prominent real estate consultant in New York City. Now, with real estate booming and supply still tight, he said less Russian cash is unlikely to materially impact prices there or in Florida. But no one actually knows how much Russian-owned real estate is out there. Until very recently, it's been pretty easy to buy houses, penthouses, or even factories in the U.S. secretly. A report last year found that $2.3 billion was laundered in the U.S. real estate market from 2015 to 2020. That's just money that's known, that's been discovered. The actual amount, who knows? Could be double, triple, quadruple, or more. Regulations that require more transparency in the real estate market are still being finalized, but it's going to be a while. So in the meantime, just another interesting aspect of the fallout over the invasion. Well, I was going to talk about our newsletter, which is out this week. I'll just say Doug Nolan of the Credit Bubble Bulletin blog has an article called Day 9. Talks a lot about what's been happening since the invasion. And Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs has one called Vaccines Cause Evolution of Virulent Diseases. I have an article in there about how soaring oil and gas prices are fanning the flames of the hottest inflation in four decades. Again, you can sign up for our newsletters and blogs at dgscoins.com. But I want to finish today's program talking about BP, Shell, ExxonMobil, Norwegian oil and gas producer Equinor. They've all released statements indicating they're severing business ties with Russia in response to its invasion. But as Pam and Russ Martins point out in today's Wall Street on Parade, U.S. billionaire oil baron Charles Koch, who has sat at the helm of Koch Industries for more than 50 years, has been unusually quiet about his plans for his sprawling operations. According to Koch Industries itself, one of the largest private corporations in the world, three of its companies operate in Russia. Molex, a manufacturer of semiconductors and other electronic components. Koch Engineered Solutions, which makes process and pollution control equipment. And Guardian Industries, which is a glass and auto parts manufacturer. Also, let's see, plus another unit of Koch Industries, Koch Supply and Trading, has a history of trading Russian oil. Guardian Industries division Guardian Glass has two large plants in Russia, one in Ryazan and one in Rostov. The Rostov plant was described as a $220 million plant, Guardian's largest, producing 900 tons of glass per day and a technologically advanced glass coater. Martin posed an important question that I'd like to repeat here. Should Charles Koch be supplying glass for homes, offices, retail, healthcare in Russia, while Vladimir Putin, in the name of Russia, is bombing homes, offices, and hospitals into rubble in Ukraine? In addition to imposing sweeping financial sanctions, both U.S. and EU have imposed sanctions intended to strip Russia of technology that would allow its economy to advance while it bombs its neighbors and makes thinly veiled threats about its potential use of nuclear weapons. According to the European Council on Foreign Relations, this is what those technology sanctions consist of. Semiconductors, telecommunications equipment, software, including encryption, lasers, aviation, and space systems, and oil refining machinery. Now, this raises the question as to whether products produced within Russia by U.S. corporations needs to be separately sanctioned. You know, other important tech players like South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, Russia's cut off from their global tech high industries. Other major corporations didn't need to have that spelled out and quickly announced that they were leaving Russia. Koch, however, not so known for his altruistic behavior. In fact, it's known for exactly the opposite. According to Import Genius, in the past 8 years, Koch Supply and Trading has purchased large amounts of oil from Gazprom Neft and Surgitex, two Russian companies. For all anyone knows, it could be trading Russian oil in world markets, which could be propping up the price of Russian oil and helping to finance Putin's brutal and murderous campaign in Ukraine. The Wall Street Journal, the first ever shipments of Russian crude oil purchased by the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve were supplied by Koch Industries. Well, for the past 40 years, Charles Koch's been involved in creating and funding a sprawling network of front groups that look to manipulate governments in the U.S. and, frankly, over most of the free world. Charles Koch, who's currently worth $53 billion, according to Forbes, also holds semi-annual strategy meetings with like-minded billionaires to plan how to sway election outcomes to candidates that will do their bidding. Koch produce consumer items such as Dixie cup plates and bowls and Northern quilted and Angel soft toilet paper. Activities of Charles Koch and Koch Industries are largely incompatible with a democracy. Not necessarily their ostensible business activities, but what they do behind the scenes. In fact, Martin's reported in January last year that the money trail to the January 6th siege on the Capitol leads directly to Koch and Koch Industries. Last March, Politico reported that Charles Koch made a commitment to donate $4.5 million to the think tank, the Atlantic Council. Tell me how you feel. Send your comments to daveallen.usa@yahoo.com. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in. Financial survival. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the...